David Hallberg's new book, A Body of Work, Dancing to the Edge and Back, provides an intimate look into the life of a world-class ballet dancer, but it also warns of the dangers that can result when dancers don't take proper care of their instruments. And his stories and insights can be a benefit to a much wider range of people, including anyone who's been bullied for pursuing a particular craft or art, or who seeks to reignite a sense of purpose, or who's looking for a way to overcome self-doubt and serious injury. David Hallberg is a principal dancer with the American Ballet Theater in New York and the first American to join the Bolshoi Ballet in Moscow as a principal dancer. And he's the founder of the David Hallberg Scholarship, which mentors young boys aspiring to a ballet career. His book is published by Simon & Schuster. I'm very pleased it has brought David Hallberg back to our show. Welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you. Glad to be back.
This book will also be of particular interest to anyone who's interested in what it means to be a ballet dancer. Can you describe a typical day? It begins with a ballet class, even if you're a principal dancer?
Oh, yeah. Ballet class is the absolute foundation. A lot of people ask, don't you have it right yet? And as a principal, no, we don't have it right yet. We daily class, I was just a daily class before I came to meet you. And it is 6 days a week, absolutely the start of the day, the most important thing.
And what are you working on?
The same thing for our entire careers, the foundation of ballet technique. It starts at bar, goes into center, turns and jumps, the whole nine yards.
And then you attend rehearsals on most days when you're not doing radio interviews. How long do they last?
Rehearsals can last anywhere from 3 hours to 7 hours. My day usually is around 4 to 5 hours of rehearsal.
And what about when you're performing? You go through all of that and then perform that night?
Absolutely not. A performance day shifts dramatically. We go into class in the morning and rest all day, stress all day, and then go into a performance.
One of the things that surprised me was that the learning never stops. Have you worked with coaches throughout your career?
I've worked with many coaches throughout my career, but very few have really struck the perfect chord. There are a couple that I mentioned in my book that have really left, you know, a significant impression on me. And two are Russian. One is at the Mariinsky Theater in St. Petersburg, and the other is at Bolshoi.
Mm-hmm. And one of them you still call Mr.
Mr. Han was my teacher when I was very young. He really planted the roots for my classical technique, and he will always be Mr. Han. I'm a 35-year-old man, and whenever I see him, I still call him Mr. Han.
How do you learn a new role? Is the choreography passed down from one dancer to the next?
Exactly. That's the most imperative thing about classical ballet, is that you don't really read notation. You don't read, you know, a book to learn Siegfried and Swan Lake. You learn it from someone that has danced it.
But okay, let's say Baryshnikov danced a role and now you're dancing it. Your body's not the same as his.
No.
Probably are incapable of doing certain things that he can do and vice versa.
That's a great question. But what Baryshnikov can teach me is the approach to a character, the artistic inclinations behind Siegfried, behind Giselle. I've rehearsed with Baryshnikov, and he blew me out of the water in his artistic interpretation towards Giselle, for instance. And the most amazing thing is he was, you know, 60 plus at that point in time, and his artistic interpretation was so clear.
There are three types of dancers in a company: core, soloists, and principals. Besides rank, what's the difference between a soloist and a principal?
Well, you know what roles you dance. A soloist will dance soloist roles and principal roles. A principal will only dance the lead roles. And interestingly, you're busier as a soloist than you are as a principal, because
you're like a supporting actor.
Exactly. But you're a supporting actor, and then you are a leading actor as well.
What about costumes? Didn't you wear one that had been worn by Baryshnikov?
Yeah, and I'm amazed it actually fit, because
you're different. You have different bodies.
There's a huge discrepancy in height. But I have to say, any dancer, I've seen it happen to other dancers as well, when they put on costume by Misha, it's immediately, you know, an Instagram moment.
But why does the ABT do hand-me-downs? Didn't the Bolshoi make a costume for you for each role?
Yeah, you know, it's based on the difference of traditions in theaters. In ABT, costumes are more heavily recycled. They, you know, they fit certain dancers and others as well. And in Bolshoi, everything is sort of tailored for you.
To the outside world, ballet is all about beauty and fantasy, but you tell a number of stories here that are rather sad and horrifying. In the case of Sergei Filin, the director of the Bolshoi Ballet, who was, he recruited you to the company.
And he did.
Was that before he was the victim of that terrible attack?
It was. He had been the director for 2 weeks and came to me with this offer that obviously I couldn't refuse. And it just opened my whole world, and I speak very, very honestly about it in the book.
Now, you say you couldn't refuse it. You had worked so hard to be the principal dancer with the ABT, and now you were giving that up?
I wasn't giving it up per se. I was sort of dividing my time.
But you were on loan to the Bolshoi?
I was on loan. But, you know, every artist has to expand their wings, you know? I think that's so important.
The attack was the result of another dancer who felt that his girlfriend should have danced in Swan Lake. Have you ever been upset because someone else was given a role that you expected to receive?
Listen, jealousy is jealousy. You know, it's a universal feeling, I think. But it all depends on how you translate that, I think. It's how you harbor it or how you use it. I look around the studio sometimes, and of course, pangs of jealousy come in. But also, you have to use that to your advantage and look around you and say, there's room for everybody.
You're not ready to kill somebody, a director, for not giving
Absolutely
you the role.
Not.
My guest is David Hallberg, who's written a memoir called A Body of Work. And you talk about falling in love with dance at an early age. What led to that, and why do you think you were bullied at school in Arizona because of that choice?
Well, I was certainly out for the count. I mean, dance came to me so naturally. I first saw Fred Astaire on the TV screen. I idolized him. And
I can understand that.
Yeah, taped nickels to the bottoms of my penny loafers to try and be a tap dancer. But I didn't think that would be cause to bully, but I was extremely teased, which I, you know, explain in quite in detail in the book.
Was it a matter of homophobia? Didn't a group of older kids pour a bottle of perfume over your head so that you'd smell like a girl?
They did, yeah. Yeah. Writing the book, I recounted these scarring memories. I thought it was very important to honestly portray what has happened to me. And, you know, bringing up those scarring memories really, I tried very hard to forget them.
Well, did the school do anything to protect you?
Interestingly, they didn't. And I think it was well before anti-bullying campaigns nowadays. Bullying now isn't accepted at all in school. But back then, the excuse was kids will be kids.
Things got better for you when you transferred to the Arizona School for the Arts.
Yeah, I found my community, you know?
But then you were bullied when you attended the Paris Opera Ballet School.
Yeah. So I went to Paris and
so can blame Arizona, but Paris?
Well, I was bullied in a different way. It was very anti-American in a way in the school. All of the students were French, and I was just seen as this sort of this American kid who should be pushed in the back of the studio. It was then an extremely formative year because of how I was bullied. My ego I didn't grow my ego. I didn't become the star pupil. I was just pushed in the back, and it caused me to just learn about the environment.
Getting back to Mr. Han, who was your teacher at the Arizona School for the Arts, didn't your parents watch a class with him and wonder if they should call Child Protective Services?
Yes.
What was going on?
Well, I would be given these private lessons by him late into the night. He was like a drill sergeant, and I loved them. My parents would come in, and they had complete trust in him, but he would look at them and say, well, are you ready? Are you about to call Child Protective Services? Because they saw how much he was drilling. He was drilling me, but that really gave me the formation of my technique.
And you weren't complaining?
I was not complaining, but if I complained, he'd kick me out of the studio.
Your career is marked by a string of successes. You were accepted into the ABT summer course, accepted into the Paris Opera Ballet School, then accepted into ABT, where you worked your way up to principal, and you've danced all over the world. You were appointed principal dancer at the Bolshoi. Yet, from your internal dialogues we get in this book, as you prepared for auditions, roles, and performances, it's clear that you often doubted your abilities. Is that common among dancers?
Very common, and I think very common among performers. You know, regardless of whether you're a dancer, a singer, or anything, you have this internal dialogue of, you know, before you go on stage, of doubt, of criticism, of confidence. But it all depends on what you do with that, you know, what you do when you get out on stage. And usually it propels you forward and leads you into the performance.
How do you learn to say to yourself, that was good, or I dance well tonight? Do you always remember just the thing that you feel you probably blew?
You remember that. You obsess over that more than you do the good things. But
you ever learn to forgive yourself?
I have learned that after the injury and recovery, absolutely. And I write that, you know, write about that in detail in the book.
Well, we'll get to the injury in a moment, but I want to talk about partnering. That's something that you say that gave you a great deal of worry. What's the problem there?
At the beginning, it was just being able to lift a ballerina. I was very weak, and I needed to gain strength and finesse on how to dance with a ballerina, how to show her off.
And then she has to trust you. Can that be a problem?
It was a problem at the beginning of my career, yes. I didn't have many ballerinas trust. I didn't really gain their trust at the beginning. But then over the course of years, you know, I learned how to be a good partner. And the biggest compliment, I think, for a male dancer is when your ballerina trusts you.
Prior to your injury, you were at the height of your career, constantly learning new roles, dancing all over the world, in addition to dancing with ABT and the Bolshoi. Looking back at your schedule, do you see your injury as inevitable?
You know, I don't if I didn't have the body I have. My instrument is fragile. I have, I'm hypermobile. I have a lot of flexibility, and therefore a lot of flexibility in my joints. So one of my joints in my foot started to shut down. And so yes, for me, that schedule drew me to crash and burn.
When you were a guest on this show in April 2015, it was clear that you didn't want to talk about your injury, not just on our show, but you didn't want to talk about it with anyone.
No, I was at a crossroads in a way. At that point, I was deciding whether or not I retire and move on and take on a leadership sort of position in the dance world.
Become a choreographer, yeah, like so many former dancers.
Well, a director or something like that. But then it was, you know, there was the fork in the road at that moment. It was, do I get back to dancing? Can I? Or do I move on?
And one of the things you did that came as a surprise to me is you went to Melbourne, Australia to get better?
Absolutely. The rehabilitation team with the Australian Ballet is the best in the world. And I knew that, I had that in the back of my mind during my recuperation here. And everything was sort of going so wrong in New York. And so I said, you know what? Why don't I just go to Melbourne and give it one last shot? I bought a one-way ticket. And went.
And because Melbourne has a reputation for helping dancers with injuries of the sort you had?
The Australian Ballet does. They've formed the most amazing rehabilitation team within the Australian Ballet. And it is world class. It really doesn't have any contemporary.
You are under the care of Dr. Sue Myers, or Mayers, is it?
Mays.
She says that you should avoid surgery as much as possible. What's wrong with surgery?
Well, surgery is invasive, and their method is you recuperate through strength, through repositioning, and that's exactly what I did when I went down there. I completely rejigged my body. I changed my body. I strengthened my body. And through that, you know, I realized that actually I didn't need to have had surgery.
Does that mean going to the gym?
It means doing very specific exercises to strengthen your legs, your calves, you know, your adductors, everything.
You write that in most dance companies, when dancers are injured, they hop onto the physiologist's table and scroll their iPhones while the physiologist does his or her thing. Should they have more interest in how their bodies work?
Absolutely. I think that's one of the greatest deficiencies within the dance community, is that there's such an ignorance in how actually our instrument works. You know, the singers know their throat and their voices so well. We need to actually know our entire bodies so well and how to condition them.
But is this something you've only come to after the injury? Prior to the injury, when you were dancing all over the world, did you think that you would even be open to hearing what you now regard as giving yourself this time to rest and heal?
I would have been open to it had I been educated to it, and I wasn't educated. I just did it. You know, I just danced. Dance came naturally to me. But when things started to shut down, I didn't know what to do.
And when you returned to dancing, were things back to normal?
Things were even better. Things are even better. I feel totally rebirthed. I have a completely different body. I'm stronger. I'm more grounded. A blessing in disguise, I have to say.
You wish you were injured earlier in your career?
No, I just know that I know what I learned while I was out. I completely reexamined not only my physicality, but myself as an artist.
It's interesting. I mentioned earlier that this book actually will be instructive to people who are not dancers, because some of the lessons you learned just apply to everyone.
Absolutely. I went down to Australia totally broken artistically, mentally, emotionally, physically, and I had to rebuild myself back up from the ground.
David Hallberg will be at Princeton University on the 30th of this month at 7:30. For more details about that, go to our show page at wnyc.org/Lopate. His memoir called A Body of Work, Dancing to the Edge and Back, is published by, who's publishing this?
Simon Touchstone. And Schuster. Yeah.
Touchstone, a division of Simon and Schuster.
Yeah.
David, it's been a great pleasure having you back on our show.
Thank you very much. Thank you.